Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, Banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what is the whole deck with galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds, for whatever you love. Infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's Fielder?
He's gone to the dogs.
Welcome, my friends, to the Gone to the Dogs podcast. Steve Fielder here, coming at you today from the great state of Pennsylvania, the home of Lone Pine Kennels. Of course, you know where I am. I'm with my friend Randy Smith. Seems like it. He's gracious enough to have me up here at least once a year. He asks me to come more often, and I love it up here. I don't know why I don't come more often, but anyway, we're here for a whole week. I came in on Monday, and Randy picked me up at the airport in that Armstrong Pest Control Uber vehicle. And things were running a little later than usual. Flights weren't running as early as I would like them. But anyway, we'll get into all that here. I just want to introduce Randy Smith. How you doing, Randy?
Great. How about you, buddy?
Oh, man, I'm great. When I get to come up here, it's just really a treat. And we kind of tuned tone things back, dial them back a little bit, kind of just play it by ear. And I know you're a busy man. You got a lot of hats and a lot of projects and a lot of dogs and all that stuff, but it's just good to come up and just spend a relaxing week with you, buddy.
Yeah, it's always a good time. Like I told you yesterday, I said it's like being able to go on vacation at home. I just planned a week where we just do whatever comes up, and then nighttime we go out hunting and hunt till we have had enough, and it's all good.
Yeah, man, and it has been good this week despite the weather. We've had some challenges
yeah.
as far as the weather goes, but one is that big old beaver moon. Why do they call it a beaver moon?
I don't know. They got a name for everything anymore, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That's above my pay grade. I've been experiencing a little bit of ragweed or something out there, and the wind's been blowing pretty much every day, so that's kind of got me all choked up here, but that's not unusual for me.
Yeah, we've been in basically a drought here for months. We get very little rain for, I would say, close to 3.5 months now. But the hunting has been pretty good. It's always unpredictable in November after these coons are ready for winter and they're fed up, and if you get conditions like we've had with full moon and it being like daylight out at night there, it was been a little bit tough. But yesterday evening it clouded up and rained a little bit, and it was really windy and ugly when we were out last night, but eventually they started to move, and we had a great hunt last night.
We did. Yeah, things have steadily improved night after night. First night, well, we didn't get an early start by any means, but ironically, we found out Tuesday night that they weren't moving early, and that was the case last night, too.
Yeah, about the first couple hours of dark is dead, and then they'd start to move a little bit then, and the dogs have looked pretty good. We treed quite a few last night and have caught a couple on the ground here this week already, which is kind of strange, but it's been good.
Well, Farrah, she had a standout night last night, this young dog you have out of Frogger and shot.
Yes.
And, you know, our friend Rod Burns hunted with us last night and with his black dog. And he went to town, literally.
Literally. We were probably 3 miles from a little town north of us here. And we had dropped him off the tracking system, and by the time we drove around and picked him back up again, he was a couple hundred yards from downtown, I guess he was.
Yeah.
Fortunately, right there on the edge of town, he smelled a coon and got treed and had a coon there. And we drove around to Farrah. Then she had a double up in a little fence road or a little ditch there. And it got better from there then. But those first couple hours, we watched them dogs travel miles and miles and not come across the coon track.
It's absolutely incredible to me, having grown up the way I did and the type of hunting I did, and of course all the years in Michigan we had so many coon that dog didn't really have to hunt that hard.
Yeah,
but you've got this new Garmin Alpha XL unit that's phenomenal.
Yeah, it's fantastic for hunting out of a side by side like that. You get to see it all. It's so handy for keeping the dog safe and knowing, you know, right what you have to do to get to them before you ever even start there. The detail and everything is so good on it that you can see, you know, trails through the woods and everything, you know. It just makes it really nice.
Yeah, we can talk about that just a little bit. That thing has got, it's like a widescreen TV, flat screen TV. It's a pretty good size. But the thing that's, besides the graphics, which are incredible, is the function. I mean, you've got everything that you've got on a handheld right there on the screen.
Right, you can tone or shock a dog or use it for navigation to get, I never used it to, we'd gotten so far from where the truck was parked last night, I was trying to figure out how to get back, and Steve said, well, there's a go button right there on the side, right? And it just like took us right back to the truck.
Yeah, you said, well, you recognized the resonance there nearby where we thought it was.
Yeah.
And so I just punched that green button and took us right back to the truck.
Yep.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's a great
amazing.
Great tool for, you know, on a night like last night, it was like 30 mile an hour winds when we started. It would keep you, if you didn't have that technology, you wouldn't go probably. You know, you'd be scared.
Exactly.
You'd never locate the dogs. You know, it would take all night just to get them rounded up. But hunting with that thing is like, it's cheating, no doubt.
Yeah, well, for an old man, it's awesome.
Yeah,
I get this. That's one thing, you know, I hate to admit it, but I've kind of progressed in my journey as a coon hunter to the point that I can't do very much walking anymore. I was telling you last night, Randy, and, you know, I've got my left knee, it's just basically bone on bone at times. Now, it's not always like that, but sometimes it's just like scraping.
Yeah.
You know, and inclines or going down, that's when it's most difficult. If it's flat, I'm good.
Yeah, well, around here, it's not very often where you're not going up or down.
Well, it's like last night, that last tree that you and Rod walked to, I didn't realize it. I knew that she was treed behind us. And I don't know, what was it, 150 or something to her?
Mm-hmm.
But I looked back there, and you guys are way up here.
Yeah.
I'm like, what, man? I didn't realize it was that steep. But
no, that's like Clayton says when he comes here, you know, we'll get around there, and it'll be like, you know, it's say, well, they're 300 yards. Clayton would be like, well, that ain't too bad, you know. I said, and then he'd say, after you get back, that's the longest 300 yards of your life, because it's measuring straight across, you know. That's not measuring down and up and down and up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that one woods last night was real pretty, but it was steep.
Oh, yeah, it was real steep.
Down there, Fair had treed a coon.
Yeah, we drove around to her there, and she was treed beyond this little field there, and she had, I guess, a triple there or whatever. We put one out to her, and I recut her, and just, I'd say, within a couple minutes, she was treed a couple hundred yards down the hollow down there. And so I went down to her, and she had another couple kitten coons there, and I put one of them out, and I recut her, and she just went about 100 yards and was just wide open and caught another young coon on the ground right there, which is strange, you know.
She's lethal.
Yeah, she's
got
a lot of fun.
So much drive, and, you know, I mean, covers ground. Oh, my goodness. Well, on Tuesday night, you know, Fran, you know, she's the same way. She covers just as much. Ground.
Yeah, they do. And they don't like run the edges or whatever. They know how to look for one, you know, but when they're not down, they ramble on till they find something.
I was talking to, I think it was Nubbin, and after the night before last hunt, and talking about it, one time that we'd shot a coon out, and Farrah was fighting that coon, and Fran just, or vice versa, I don't remember which it was.
Oh, it was Farrah caught one on the ground.
Yeah.
And Fran never even...
Didn't even blink, man, just motored.
Yeah.
I'm like, asked me a question. I'm going to put you on the spot here. Did you train that in to a degree, or was that pretty much natural?
Well, they were both naturally independent, but in order to get them to that point of independence there, of course, they had to be reinforced, you know, to never. And we, you know, once we get them where they're solid, we test them so that they are almost destined to fail, so you can correct them and, you know, and Yeah, you can be shooting a coon out now and recut one right next to it, and they're not gonna. They're hightailing.
Yeah,
we've had Troy and I've had more fun training them two dogs there than probably I've ever had in my life. You know, we put a lot of time into them, and it shows. Yeah. They're top shelf.
Yeah, we mentioned Fran, mm-hmm. little Fran. I always liked their mama.
Yep.
And she's out of Hardeman's Jeb, who has now passed on. I asked you yesterday if he was still living. And, of course, he produced the Josie Wales dog, which you've got some beautiful pups out here out of Josie.
Yeah, Josie's a good reproducer, too. When I first used them two, I had Fran and Shot were in heat at the same time, and we bred one to Josie and one to Jeb, and I was glad I did both. It was all good. Yep.
Yeah. Beautiful dogs, too.
Yep.
Looked at your kennel. You got a great system there where you can just let them out of their runs, and they've got a big area. What is that area? How big is that?
I'd say it's about 3/4 acre, something like that. Yeah.
And looking over the pack there, so to speak, and I had some beautiful walker hounds. And I don't think there was a male in the bunch.
No, I can't have a male dog here. Sometimes it seems like it'd be a good idea until you do it, and then there's always somebody either in heat or coming in or going out, and it just makes chaos if there's a male here.
I imagine.
Yep.
It was interesting to me when I was out in Texas hunting with Shorty Gorham, the rodeo bullfighter out there.
I remember
there,
that, yeah.
Hunting bobcats with his dogs, and he neuters his males.
Yeah, so that there's no issue.
And then he can just hunt the bitches all right on through, you know. Mm-hmm. And then he may have a stud dog over there somewhere somebody's got that he'll breed to, you know.
Yep, let them have the hassle.
Well, it's easier with females for sure.
Lately there was a male dog that I really would have liked to have bought, and I didn't. A friend of mine bought him off of me, Josh Hessler, as a pup. He was out of Driveline and Shot.
Shot's out of Jigs.
Yeah, Miss Quickie. And I referred him to Bob Dudley. And Bob Dudley bought him, and Daryl Guess hunts him for Bob. And he's like a magic man, you know. They've done super with him. He's got an incredibly bright future. But I can't have a male dog here, so that's just that. Yeah. Yep.
Well, I just have to bring this up because I've hunted several times with the dog and all, and when you see him out there, he's popping up in the winter circles regularly now, Final Fours and $100,000 hunts and all this kind of stuff. And that's the Clyde dog. Yeah. And now he's out of Old Fran.
Yes.
And the Coney Valley Pack dog of Sean Burden's, which was a Power Pack and Easy dog, which is a lot of those. So that's a Lone Pine dog. When you see his name popping up out there in all these Final Fours, you don't really see anything about Lone Pine there. But his mother was, he was born right here. I know that because I hauled him to Virginia to Keston Jesse, who owned him and trained him.
I would expect him as long as he doesn't have any tragedies, he's going to get right up there, and he's doing really well, and he's really young yet. So
Well, it's just, to me, you know, a lot of the dogs that get overlooked, and you don't really realize it as we talk about the ones that, you know, that have been so successful, like Biffy Sue winning the World Hunt and Million Dollar Baby winning, you know, getting in all those Final Fours, second place at the UKC World and all of that stuff. But there's a lot of others out there that you don't hear about that are really, really doing well.
Most of my pups go to pleasure hunters. Mm-hmm. You know, they just, I try to, you know, breed for ease of training, because if you're a breeder, it's very important that pups aren't born with a bunch of things to deal with, because, you know, just to be frank about it, you know, a lot of coon hunters just aren't equipped to deal with a lot of problems that dogs would have. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you're breeding for dogs that are, you know, easy to train, that they're not junky, and they want to have a coon when they tree it, they get a whole lot better chance. And, you know, one that's raising cane in the kennel all day, and, you know, they just can't wait to run anything that lays a track and stuff. You know, just, you know, so many people just don't want to deal with that, and I can understand it. I'm the same way. I'd rather just go out and have a pleasurable experience rather than having a knothead to deal with, you know, so.
Yeah, and I don't mean to belabor the point, but the Clyde dog, you know, when Keston got him, he brought him in the house with his kids, and they taught him, you know, to sit and shake and all this stuff.
And,
he's a go yonder. We don't use that word go yonder as much as we used to, but he'll definitely go hunting. So,
I wish those guys the best with him. I'm going to probably, you know, once they get to where they'll agree to use him in a, you know, to breed him, I'm going to try him here sometime. Mm-hmm. You know, should be great, I would think.
Oh, I would think. He's a beautiful dog and got a tremendous mouth. Well, anyway, moving on that, kind of back, I wanted to kind of finish up on our hunt. Mm-hmm. All right, Monday night, we only treed one coon, but we got a real late start, and they just weren't moving.
Yeah, it was like daylight out when
we
hunted Farrah the first night there, and she struck a coon there, not too terrible far, maybe 300 or 400 yards from where we cut her, and worked up a cold track and got it around the side of the mountain there and treed and had a big coon, and we recut her, and I would say the better part of 2 hours later, we got her off a den tree. She rambled through the, oh my goodness, it was. We hunted near the house here, and she went through about 4 of the hunting areas that we hunt in. Just she's in the safe area at least, but yeah, it was really tough.
Well, I keep bouncing back and forth on this stuff, but that Alpha XL, you can see when those dogs, you know, they're moving through the country, you got a straight line, and then maybe they'll slow down a little bit, and you can see the wiggles in that line if they're working something.
You know if you're 2 miles from them there, well, you know, that it's got the bark detector that comes up on there, you know, it'll say that they're barking, and so you know they're, I mean, it's really made a huge impact on coon hunting, for sure.
But it does show you, just exactly on a bad night like that, a dog that will hunt, just how much ground they do cover.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's nice to watch them on there. They're not looping around, and they're, you know, they're just taking this ridge and down this hollow and up this creek bottom, and, you know, they're,
that's right.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Doing their thing.
Yeah.
Well, so that was kind of we I don't know what time we quit Monday night, but it was just a bad night. They're just so bright and nothing moving. But then Tuesday night, it was kind of funny. It just kind of switch flipped about, 10 o'clock?
Yeah,
or
I'd
so.
Say that about 2 hours after it got dark there. So all of a sudden, they come down, and we treat a bunch of coons in, and the dogs look good. So that was
a good night. I've posted on Facebook kind of a little journal of these hunts. So anybody out there listening that you want to kind of get a little more detail on some of these things with some pictures and all, we get some good pictures and all. But well, and then of course we've been running the little short legged walker dogs, the beagles. That's been fun.
Yeah, we had a pretty good chase there yesterday.
Oh yeah,
but dry and windy, and beagles are really scent condition sensitive. You know, it's just like when I never could really understand that, but when you talk to beaglers, you know, say, oh, the running was good, you know, and I never, you know, usually with coon dogs, if the coons are down, you know, it's like about the same, yeah. You know what I mean? It can yeah. be, conditions can be better or worse or whatever, but they usually are just getting it done. But beagles are, that's a whole different ball yeah. game, that's for sure. But the ones I got there do a pretty good job. We usually, you know, when the weather gets bad and we can't coon hunt, it keeps us busy doing something that we like, and they've brought a lot of them around to us, you know, so we enjoy that.
Oh, yeah. Well, back in the day, you know, at UKC, we started that hunting beagle program, and I got some dogs, and I enjoyed running those beagles. I really did, and I learned a lot about beagling and about scent conditions and about how those dogs operate, you know, and all. But yesterday, it was kind of funny. We're sitting there at this one place right by the buggy, and the rabbit popped over the hill. We both saw the rabbit, yeah. and then he cut into the brush real quick, and it was too far for a shot anyway.
Yeah.
But, and then they got him rolling, really had him rolling for a good while down in there, sounding good. And you got in the buggy for something, looked in the buggy, and as soon as you got back out, here comes the dogs yep. across.
Yep, you can't take your eyes off that path for a minute. Yeah.
Yeah. Just good stuff, fun yep. stuff. I picked up some good pictures of some old deserted farm buildings. And we commented about what a shame it is to see a beautiful farm like that just going back to the elements.
Yeah, it sure. There's a lot of that going on across the countryside. Yeah. You know, what I wouldn't do to have them big barns, you know, and stuff like that. Oh, and when you yeah. see the roofs going on them and everything, that's yeah. just terrible. But people don't, you know, I mean, can you imagine what it costs to reproduce that today? You know, hundreds mm-hmm. of thousands of dollars and to not keep a roof on them, you know, I just can't understand that. But some people don't just see value in it, you know, that's all. But
yeah. You know, when I was young, we'd be back hunting in the mountains in West Virginia, and we'd come up on an old home place, maybe nothing but a chimney still standing
sure.
part
yep.
of it.
Yep.
And my dad would say to me, you know, he'd say, Steve, you realize that these mountains were full of people at one time.
Yeah.
There were, you know, settlers everywhere. Mm-hmm. And, but, you know, as times got hard and they ended up moving to the cities. And
sure.
We had a saying in West Virginia, the three R's you learned in school, reading, writing, and Route 21 to Cleveland. that was the curriculum. But yeah, and to see that time, you know, just takes its toll on those.
Yeah, the work that it took back in the day for those people to, you know, build a home or, you know, clear a place to, you know, have a little bit of livestock and grow enough to survive, and then you see it just go back to nature and it's mm-hmm. grown up. It's always was sad to me, you yeah. know, to, yeah,
it
to
is.
see it go like that, you know. But,
quite yeah. often on Facebook, I'll post a picture of an old farmhouse or something, you know, up at, on my homepage, and people have commented, boy, you like those old buildings, don't you? And I do. I
yeah,
like the
cool.
stories they've got,
yeah.
they tell, and I try to imagine what it was like to live there. Mm-hmm. But you, on that one farm we were at yesterday, you remember when it was a nice farm, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah. I trapped air off a three-wheeler as a kid, you know. It was probably 4 miles from the house here, and them old farmers, you know, just they'd see you coming in the fall there, and you know, you could see them talking back and forth. Well, it's trapping season again. You know, you never even had to just threw your arm up, and they knew what was going on. You know, it was a different time already. Those like with the last of the Mohicans there, those.
Yeah.
The mindset was, you know, you just stay out of the fields and you can do anything you want. You know, it was really a good time to grow up around here. Everybody was welcoming, you know.
I've noticed nowadays when you go coon hunting, you never know what you're going to encounter.
Oh, my, yes.
We yep. got a warning last night that there was a rabid fox and we needed to be careful.
We parked at across the road from a customer of mine there, and one of the tenants come out, and she was right on it right away what we were doing, and she said she had been attacked by a rabid gray fox. Oh my, I'd say that was just about the least of her worries.
Oh, I would say, yeah. And then the night before, we had a character stop that's there and talk to us, and he had quite an aroma. We had to roll the windows up on him.
Yeah, that full moon, Coons Night might not be moving, but the people were out and about.
When my wife was teaching, she'd say, oh, it's a full moon. Those kids are going to be crazy.
Yeah. There's probably something to that.
Yeah, I guess. Well, I wanted to, I'm going to take a little break here just a second. I want to talk about the dogs we got down here now, and your two main dogs, I guess, right now that you're hunting and, you know, taking to town, so to speak, are the Little Fran female and the Farrah female, right?
Yeah, that are here now. But, you know, there's other guys that have other ones that are, you know, they're competing with and stuff. But yeah, the ones here at the house, yeah, yep.
I saw a final three at some hunt in the area, and all three dogs in there were Lone Pine dogs.
Yeah.
I recognized a couple of them, but yeah. So, well, that's a dilemma for a guy like you, or maybe not a dilemma, but at least a challenge to find people to hunt these dogs.
Oh, for sure. The coon hunters here in Pennsylvania are just about extinct. You know, it's just a fraction of what it was even 10 or 15 years ago, you know. But in Pennsylvania here, the coon hunting has always been driven by the fur market. You know, it was mostly always hide hunters and pleasure hunters that made up probably 80% of the coon hunters in Pennsylvania, and the rest would competition and hunt and be hide hunters. But since it's been so long since there's been a fur market, they've just fiddled out to nothing, you know. Mm-hmm. They're just, and you know, that I know for a fact that the guys that work with pups and everything that countrywide here have just dwindled to a sheer fraction of what it was, you know, years ago there. But it's too bad. I mean, we basically all year long maybe hear another dog two or three times all year around here, and it used to be a whole lot different than that. Right. You know, you'd see vehicles pulled over in season all over the place, you know, somebody.
Well, I haven't. Did I comment the other night that I might have heard a dog treeing somewhere? I don't know,
but I don't think we did.
No.
And
I think one, maybe last year or one of my trips up here, we ran into it. There were a couple coon hunters that were out there fairly close to here. But, you know, we don't want to accept it, but our sport is, it's terminal.
It seems so, yeah.
I mean, and it's not going to be overnight, and there's certainly areas that would hear me say that, and they'd say, man, you're crazy. There's still a lot. And I do believe, and you mentioned that most of your pups go to pleasure hunters. I believe there's a lot more pleasure hunters than there is competition hunters.
Sure there are.
Yeah.
But, you know, just overall, the bad part about it is that as communities across the country get used to you know, not hearing dogs and not being, you know, associated with what we're doing out there, I think the less they're tolerant of it. You know, they just, you know, it's when you don't know, when you're not familiar with what, you know, is going on out there, people just become, you know, uneasy whenever they see or hear something out there at night. You know, they just don't know what's going on. And used to be everybody knew what a hound sounded like or Beagles running or something, and it's just a thing of the past almost, which is sad. But
yeah, that's a good point you make, Randy. But where everybody used to, my old buddy up in Michigan, Bud Bauer, he used to talk about how he'd have his wife take in a friend of his about 4 miles away and drop them off, and they hunt all the way back home and through all kinds of. And he said, you never worried about trespassing on anybody. Nobody cared.
Yep.
You know, and if they saw you out there, saw your light, they knew what you were doing.
Yeah, most people, if they see a light out there now, you know, they're like really suspect of something going on, you know, and I can understand it, really, you know, they just don't understand it anymore. It's too bad, you know.
But if
you're going to be a coon hunter today, you probably got to have pretty thick skin, or you've got to have a lot of public land to hunt, because it's just the way it is, you know. Yeah. Fortunately here, you know, if you talk to people, even if you get on the wrong place or whatever, they're most of the time they're fairly understanding, you know. So that's, I'm thankful for that.
Yeah, if you explain to them what you're doing, you know, and all. We had one guy there that got a little irate, but then he calmed right down.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, the dog's traveling so much, you know. You have some places that you got permission to hunt on, and it's a really rural area. And you turn them loose on a night like it's been here this week, and within 5 minutes they're off that couple hundred acres or whatever, and they're gone. And I mean, what, you know, it's just the nature of the sport. You know, them dogs are going to go until they find the game that they're after, and it's tough.
Well, you got to be. Nowadays, you got to have a little bit of boldness, a little bit of you got to be courageous. You can't be easily intimidated.
No, or you'll be done.
Yeah,
you'll have to quit. You know, that's all there is to it.
Yeah. Well, I don't advocate that everybody take the attitude of this, but in the old thing, it's much easier to ask forgiveness than it is permission sometimes.
Well, you surely can't, the way these dogs hunt, you can't have, you can't know everybody, so you just go with it. But
well, it's an evolution, and thanks to companies like Garmin and all that come up with these technologies that allow us to keep up with these dogs, because as I sat there in a buggy and looked at how wide and hard these dogs have hunted this week, and I said, there's no way that I could have hunted a dog like that back home when I was growing up hunting.
Yeah.
They'd be lost all the time.
We'd know,
and we did lose them.
Sure.
At times.
Yep.
But, you know, it's crazy.
Yep.
Well, okay. What we got out there, you got made some crosses in the last year since I was here. What are some of the notable crosses you've made here within, say, the last year?
I bred Bertha to Driveline.
Now, Bertha is out. Let me test my knowledge here. She's out of World Champion Biffy Sue, and the Louie dog that was a little mate to old Fran.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
Score me one.
Yep, so she's been bred 3 times now. I bred her the first time to Bone Collector Semen, and one of those that you saw, you know, in the winter circle the other night is a daughter of Bone and Bertha. And then the next time I bred her to Bone, Frogger, I'm sorry. And she only had one female in that bunch, and John Strickland's good buddy from down south there wanted her real bad, so I had so many here I let her go, so I don't have one of them out of that bunch there. But then the last time here I bred her to Driveline, which I'm a real fan of. He throws nice houndy open trailing dogs that are good about having a coon and got great mouths, and I've used him before, bred shot to him, and that's where that rock dog come that Bob Dudley has. And then Bob Dudley and I own his sister together. I sent her down there. He'd been after me to get a young dog for a couple years here now, so she was the right one, I thought. And then lately here I bred Dinah. That's a daughter of Fran and Bone Collector to Frogger. I got a little female down there now that's weaning.
Now, Dinah was a sister to the Truck Winner.
To Bella. Well, not Truck Winner. Bella won 100,000.
Yeah.
Yep, she was out of that litter. And, I bred Lady to Josie Wales. Those pups are, they must be about 12 weeks or
you talk about some beautiful pups.
Yeah, they're really nice.
And of
really
course
nice.
Lady was the Joy Super Hunt winner and Truck Winner.
Yeah. So that was the few there that I've done here over the last since you were here last, and we've got a couple young dogs down there now that are tree and coons that we haven't brought out here because of this moon and all this, but there's a female that Clayton helped me get going out of Little Money and shot that's exceptionally good, exceptionally nice. She, when these coons quit moving and there was, they've been sitting in the oaks eating acorns, she went to treeing some squirrels for me, and I've been working on her a little bit for that, so we've been waiting for a little cloud cover to break her out, maybe hunt her tonight a little bit. But she's got real special qualities about her that I like. And
you know, those dogs have a special look to them, and I really like it. They're houndy, man. Yeah. Are they houndy? If you like long ears on your walker dogs, you're gonna like those shy puppies, man.
Yeah, that Jigs. He was known for having them low set eared dogs, you know, but he was a great dog to breed to, and I, through Pete Olivia, I ended up with two breedings from him here, and I used one on Lady the first time I bred her, and I got one more to use here yet, but it looks, you know, the future looks good. I have one of those ones out of Bone and Bertha that Frank Giddings hunted for me for a couple months here this summer that she's exceptionally nice. Gonna finish out into a nice dog, I'm sure. But we've got our hands full here. We've got too many dogs. But if you're going to keep a breeding program going and everything, you gotta keep them. And when you don't have a lot of help, you know, you just as the time warrants and everything, they may not be as advanced. Sometimes I'll have ones here that are really young, and the timing was right, and they've done great since they were, you know, 7 or 8 months old. And sometimes it takes me a little longer to get to that point, but we'll get there. We've just been enjoying coon hunting here and, you know, preparing for competition. And you wanted to talk about Walker Days a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Well, the 1919, boy, I tell you what, I'm going back there, Randy. I do remember in the 1900s.
Yeah, so do
almost
I.
Almost all the way back to 46.
Yeah,
but no, the 2025 Walker Days, the dog we talked about a little bit here, little Fran, was the winner. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I've been trying to win Walker Days for close to 40 years now, I guess, and got real close a few times, high score and opposite sex, and one time about, I don't know, maybe 18 years ago, one bad tree call lost me the high score, and I was hunting Muscle Man, a dog out of Track Man and Patsy, and got down by myself, and we were in great coon hunting, and turned him loose in there, and he never would locate and move on, and we were wanting to run that score up, you know. We turned him in there, and he just died on a tree, and he was right in front of us, probably 100 yards, and just moved over about 20 yards and settled down, you know. He winded that coon or whatever, and that one and a quarter there gave it to Big D instead of him, you know. So, but anyway, we were highly anticipating Walker Days this year because it was right down the road from Clayton's, and Clayton was all geared up to guide us and everything. And so all the guys wanted to hunt the slam hunts. And I just said, well, I'll just hunt the regular hunt. You know, I just let everybody do what they want to do, and I'll take what's left. So I went with Clayton, and I drew a really, really nice dog and made a new friend, and a dog called Little Joe that I drew there that Daniel Wilson owns. And we had a great hunt. I don't know how many coons that we treed, but I think I scored. Well, it come down to Joe and Fran, and we moved. We'd been in the same spot for the better part of 2 hours, and we moved, and we turned the dogs loose, and Joe got the strike, and it was under the minute, and it was, you know, it was a loose strike or whatever. So he took a minus there, and that really put him out. And we turned in this little woods, and the wind was coming from the left to the right, and it was just, everything was like perfect. You know, I just knew they were just going to drill a couple coons in there. And Fran went the whole way back to the back end of that woods and had never made a peep. And she opened a time or two, and I got her struck there, and you could tell it wasn't a track, you know. It was just she was winding up in the air there, and she come treed, and it was the hunt was about over. There was only a few minutes left. There was no time to put the stationary on or anything like that, and I could have just rode it out and had like a, you know, five and a quarter cast win or whatever. And they were saying, boy, the weather was supposed to be terrible the next night, you know, heavy rains and stuff. And I thought, man, it's not going to be enough to get me into the finals, you know, to hunt the way the format Walker Days is kind of a elimination type of thing. And so I said, yep, just tree her. I got to take, you know, I'm going to take the chance. And we went in. She had a coon sitting down low right there, and it was all good. So that was enough to get me in for Friday night. And then I drew a tough cast with Whitey Marshall, and we had a coon tree and session go on there Friday night, and Fran ended up on the top there, and that put us in the final four. And then the final four on Saturday night was Eric Pyatt and Randy Gadd and Matt Bebout hunting a dog for Russ Beller. So it was a pretty good lineup, and she did super. She treed three coons.
Have you got the scorecard?
Yeah, I do. Yeah,
they
gave it to me here not too long ago. Yeah. Yeah, so she treed a coon right in front of us right there that none of them wanted any part of, and got it scored for 2 1/4, I believe. I had first strike, and it was like a rolling type of woods there, not like where we had hunted the first couple nights. And I recut her, and she went way behind us and crossed a big open field and got into a woods like a half a mile behind us there. Then Matt's dog went to treeing coons out through there, and we were a mile from her when she made her final tree, and we could hear her just like she was, you know, right there beside us. But she had treed a coon. Her second coon was in that woods across the road way behind us there, and we scored it, and then we had to walk the whole way back, and then, you know, that back and forth thing. And I didn't, when we were walking away from her off of her second coon, everybody heard her, you know, open back in there and get treed, but I was kind of holding off to make sure I needed to tree her, and then it got to the point where I needed to, and it was windy and everything, but we could still hear her plain as day, you know, over a mile back in there, and she had
the wind. She's a tree dog.
Yeah, she is. Yeah,
she is a tree dog.
She put on a good show there. Yeah. So the only sad part about it is like, you know, there's no handbook to be on the cover of anymore, and it's just, you know, it's just kind of dwindled as far as the recognition goes. But it was a big deal for me. I'd been trying to win that hunt for a long time, and Troy was along, and we'd really put a lot of work into getting there, you know, so it was good. It was great.
Absolutely.
She had been in the Final Four 2 years ago, though, too, so under this new format, you know, where they have the Final Four Walker Day, so... I don't think that's been done before, so that was good.
Well, I enjoyed getting a picture, or you took a picture the other night of Troy and me with Fran and a nice big coon. That's one we'll go. I'll keep that one close.
She had a monster coon treed way back in the middle of nowhere there where we took a picture. That was good.
Such a good looking female too. Yeah. Well, you know, we've talked about this before, especially in the early days, about the Lone Pine dogs and how way back they were kind of open spotted and ticked up and different things and all. And when you got the Sackett Junior Stud Dog Cowboy, you started producing some nice blanket pack, tri-colored pups and all that. But, man, I walk out here and look at these pups you got now. There's no calls.
No, they just...
Some of them are a little more open than
others.
Oh, sure.
I don't care what they're colored like or whatever. Yeah. I just like for them to have houndy characteristics and, you know, have the good mouths and stuff. I don't care if they're open or if they're blanketed or they got a few ticks on them. And if I use dogs that are line bred, my stuff, it's definitely going to, you know, the origins of, you know, Lone Pine Lady was a red tick English female was her mother. So there's no way of getting around it, you know. And if you have all that stuff stacked up in there, it's going to, you got to, you know, if you plant corn, you get corn. So that's going to be.
The old lady female.
In the 60s, Lone Pine Lady.
Yep. What a legacy, man. Mm-hmm. What breedings that you've got your eyes on now, maybe planning?
Well, I'm definitely going to the fellows that own the semen from Tree Slam and Frankie want me to, you know, use it. So I've got a couple females I think I'm going to
try.
And I really, really liked those dogs. They had big motors and good mouths and were easy about, you know, they desperately wanted to have a coon when they treed, and it didn't matter if it was 65 at night or if it was 16, you know, they were old Louie and, you know, Fran, they could tree them, it didn't matter what the temperatures were and everything. And that's important here if you're, you know, going to enjoy coon hunting. You can't have an ambush dog that's running around the edges there. You're just chasing dogs all night long, you know. They need to be trailing style of dogs that, you know, are real picky about trees that they make and everything, because you don't make a lot of trees here, you know. And there's no, if you got a dog that is, you know, not wanting to have a coon bad enough, it's really hard to train one out of that here because there's not another coon anywhere around there. You know, you run them off of trees and it might be a half a mile before they'd be coming onto another coon track. So,
Well, the first time I came up and hunted with you, we hunted Fran and out of Frankie, and we hunted Shot out of Jigs.
They were young at the time.
Young dogs too, but I like, you know, watching on the drive track, you know, watch the way Fran hunted down the creeks and hunted the woods out and all that, and I just liked her.
Yeah.
I liked her looks, and I know that she wasn't one of your top competition dogs, probably.
She was soft-hearted, so it was hard to, you know, correct her and everything. Mm-hmm. But she was naturally a joy to hunt. And she
Oh yeah,
yeah. She was, She was definitely a sweetheart. Yep.
And of course, again, I don't want to belabor that point, but she's the mother of that of the Clyde dog, you know, that we talked about with Sean.
Yeah, there was only two in that litter, two males.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so you got that one planned. What else you think?
Well, I'll probably still try to get another litter or two, maybe out of Driveline and Frogger here coming up. You know, they've been. Whenever I get a dog that works good with, you know, my line of dogs, I can usually use them. Mm-hmm. You know, on about any of them, and the results are similar. You know, they usually do.
Well,
do pretty good.
I'll just go out on a limb here and say that if anybody was thinking about Frogger, they need to hunt with Farrah.
She, I made a post here maybe this winter, you know, that she was up for discussion and I'd take $100,000 for her, you know. And to tell you the truth, I enjoy that dog so much that I probably wouldn't sell her for $100,000. Mm-hmm. You know, she's just, you've seen over and over again, you know, the kind of dog that she is.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. Last year, conditions were tough.
Yeah.
You know, yep. I mean, she's just a real deal.
And she got that mouth. You can hear her 2 miles if you're, you know, within earshot of, you know, if you're up high somewhere, you can hear her. And she just does it, and she makes it look easy, and she's great. Yeah, we're still working on, you know, but she still not quite the same dog in competition that what she is, you know, here just hunting. Mm-hmm. But that comes with age, you know. She's
still young.
Yeah, yeah, she just turned 3 in September here, so she's just coming into her. Coming into the right times here.
Well, I got to see, well, last night was an example. Anything you want a coon dog to do, she can do it, including killing some of these big old bad coons.
Yeah, she's a warrior.
She's gritty.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you. She's,
I don't know, you know, I haven't hunted with a lot of dogs out of Frogger, but I went and hunted with Birchall. Oh, one time we drove out there to breed, and it was frosty right at dark, and I don't remember the name of the dog he was hunting at the time, but he made an impression on me. He was the real deal, and there's a lot of them like that.
Yeah.
You know,
see my friend William Brooks down in Georgia posting some pictures of his. Yeah, he bred a female to Frogger.
Right, right. Yeah, I know he did.
And I think he's pretty happy with those pups.
Yep.
Well, Frogger, he's been a hot item for the last.
Yeah, and then, you know, the nice part about it is Birchall's, you know, really easy to work with, and he wants you to get pups, you know, and he's a five-star dude. Him and I are good buddies, you know, so they're having an all Frogger hunt coming up here towards the end of the month that I'm hoping we can make.
Yeah, well, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. That'd be right up Ferris Alley then.
Yeah.
Well, we're going over this weekend to a PKC Pro Classic.
Yeah, Mercer County Coon Hunters were Kyle Preston and John Owens. They've been really pushing hard to make advancements in that club there, and they've done fantastic. And their Chip Cozier's sponsoring the hunt. He's going to have a steak dinner for everybody, and
had an elite nutrition.
Yeah. So that'll be a good time, I'm sure. You know.
Yeah, I've been playing phone tag this week with Chip. He called and I don't know what he wants, but
we'll have to give him a call back. That was the number that was coming in on your phone.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. He's trying to call me then. Yeah. So yeah, but I'm looking forward to that. Seeing some of the guys from up here. I hadn't personally met John Owens. I'm looking forward to that. You and I both kind of indirectly worked with that stud dog auction they had over there.
Yeah.
Your dog got the, I think, was the top winner on that.
Yeah, they were raising money for a kid with disabilities to get him a dog, and they pulled it off, and it was a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we were proud. We managed to get a plot in there in the top five.
Yeah. That was awesome. Yeah.
But, yeah, that was cool. Good. You really admire clubs that are trying. You know, it's a difficult time for clubs and that are really putting quality events out there and trying.
Yeah, it's really hard.
Our buddy John Sapier down at Spartanburg, South Carolina, they're doing the same type of thing, trying to keep the events going, you know, and getting, you know, events for kids and all that kind of stuff. And Yeah,
they're going to have the UKC Youth Nationals up there this year.
So that's great.
We're going to try to have a pup waffle to support that hunt there. And I was hoping to we can generate enough revenue to have really nice stuff for the kids there and everything. You know, I don't have anybody left in the youth program here in my house.
Yours have all grown up.
Yeah, but we're going to see what we can do to bring kids from all over the country up there. And they'll make sure that those kids are in good hunting and have good quality judges with them and everything. Mm. It's going to be a big thing.
I'm sure it'll be top drawer.
Yeah, they've got a big lake there for the kids to fish in and all kind of room for for campers and tenters or whatever they want to do.
Will that be in the spring then?
June is when the
school's
day.
Out.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's going to be great. Awesome. That might be something you might want to be up here for.
Yeah, maybe so, for sure. Well, I tell you, thanks to you, Randy, you've made these trips so much easier for me. I used to do that two-day drive up here, and like me, my truck's getting old, and I'm getting the price of trucks nowadays. I just can't justify buying a new truck for no more than
Well, for a cheap air ticket to come up here, it's ridiculous to drive, really.
Yeah, and the fact that you've been picking me up at the airport, taking me back, and man, that just makes it all easy. Folks, I tell you, I have had a blast this week. I have eaten way too much. last night, Carrie made us a delicious dinner. Night before, Randy had steaks on the grill with all the sides, and I don't know what. Well, Monday night, we got here too late. But we still, when we come in from hunting, the fridge is stocked with every kind of cold cut and goodie that you can imagine. It's just it's a wonderful experience for me when I get to come up with my friend Randy. And his family has become like family to me. I've watched your boys grow up, you know, and especially I've enjoyed seeing Troy get so involved with the dogs and with the coon hunting and how much, and he's now graduated from technical high school and working in the family business here, and Cole's still in school but he's driving now and setting records with his motorcycle. Golly, I saw the video of him the other day racing. He got a overall second place, and he's racing against these adults.
Yeah, he's doing really good. He's really driven to, you know, keep getting better. And those kids grow up so quick, but we've not missed a second of it. You know, we've been involved with everything they wanted to do, and
sure,
it's been wonderful.
Well, it's tough to say what I'm going to say now, but this has been my first trip up here, we're missing Shirley, your mom, who recently passed away, a couple weeks ago?
Yeah.
Tough thing, because she's just such a wonderful lady, and so many. I am just so thankful that I got to meet both your dad and mom, and And of course, selfishly, I'm going to miss those lunches. She always had us over for lunch when I was up here, and it was always delicious, and or dinner after church. And yeah, Randy, my heart goes out to you and all the family for this tremendous loss to you. But
there's a hole there that I'll never be able to fill. She was just everything to us, so it's really tough.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. But we know that she was prepared.
Yes,
and
she
we
was.
Know where she is, and we know that we're going to see her again someday. And that's the consolation. And I, quite frankly, don't understand, and I think our friend Rod mentioned this when we were talking about, it's like people that don't have faith, don't have their faith to lean on in times like these. You know, I don't frankly know what they do, but
it's just the explanation on where we're at as a society is that they're lost. You know, if you have no, faith in Christ about where you're headed in life and everything, what sense is there in doing the right thing, there just isn't any,
right.
I just don't know how you can go on,
right.
without that. But, you said about when you come here, if you ever wanted to learn anything about hospitality or anything, and you were around my mom, you didn't pay attention then, she taught me, how important it was to, even, if you knew you would never get that same treatment, you still just keep handing it out there, and that's what she did her whole life. So,
and she taught you very well, and Carrie too. I know, Carrie was very close. To your mother, and just a wonderful family that I'm so proud to be able. Now, we were talking the other day. 2016 was the year I met you and Rick Strouser and Tom Strang out at Walker Days in Greencastle. That was the year your Biffy Sue won the world championship. And it's going to be 10 years.
Yeah.
This spring. So it's kind of hard to believe. But it's been it's truly been good fortune for me to be able to make that connection. You've been so gracious in providing pups for me, and the list goes on and on and on, but I want to thank you publicly.
Well, we've enjoyed it, just as much as you have. It's great to have friends come here, and we don't have the best hunting in the world here, but we do what we can do to get some coons treed and have a good time and fellowship with each other, and that's what it's all about.
And to that point, if you lived in a coon zoo where there's a coon up every tree, it wouldn't really illustrate how good these dogs are. But when people come here and see where you hunt and the kind of terrain you do and see how hard sometimes the dogs have to work for them to find them and all, and the number of coons a tree, even on these bad nights we've had here now, we've probably treed 15 coon or something like that all together. But it to me, it's just a great place to see what the dogs are capable of.
I agree that when they're trained here, they know that that they're going to have to work for it. So that's. Hmm. I mean, it's nice, working young dogs in where there's a lot of coons and it's easy. And it helps me whenever I have people like Clayton that'll take them and, get them where they've got the basics down, But
sure.
The overall military training here afterwards, it shows, whenever they're.
Yeah.
Yep. They. Yeah. It's I think it's good for them to have to buck the briars and the hills and all that and, make it happen regardless, so.
What's that old coaching adage or what winning is where preparation meets
the will to
the will to prepare to win is more important than the will to win.
Right.
I guess that's the one. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's good. We enjoy it, though.
Well, I tell you what, Randy, we've been at this thing here about 1 hour and 6 minutes. That's probably long enough to torture these people. But no, I really appreciate the opportunity again. I'm going to get you on here every time I come up here because it helps my ratings. No, people do enjoy your experience and your wisdom. And I did want to ask you, you've made several strides in whelping puppies and raising puppies, and you've shared a lot of that with people. I think maybe Clayton maybe did a video with you, didn't he?
Yes.
Is that available on YouTube?
Yes, it is. Yep, all on Stark Outdoors, all the stuff that Clayton did is on there. And, you know, there's a lot of things that you can do to puppies that are in trouble and everything that you can do right at home, you know, you just got to have a little bit of knowledge on doing it. And there's a lot of things on that video there that'll, you know, so many times through the years, I would watch puppies that the mama kicked them out, you know, you just for whatever reason, you know, nature, you know, they just start to push them away, you know, and there's a few little things that you can do to get them, you know, back to strength, and, you know, just think simple things like tube feeding a puppy or hydrating them, you know, under the skin with a hypodermic. I mean, just little things, you know, that you can get Pedialyte, you know, unflavored Pedialyte, save a puppy's life, you know. It's just simple things, you know, and it's all on there, and I'm always glad to help guys that are in trouble or whatever, and my phone number is always out there, but it's, you know, you can message me on Messenger or whatever, and I'm glad glad to help anybody.
Right. Likewise, if you can't remember that, guys, just contact me and I'll get you the number for Randy. And yeah, that's one of the most frustrating things it was for me, was when things go wrong with the litter of puppies.
Oh my! And it's still, I mean, I tell everybody that, you know, there's people on the waiting list, you know, for puppies and everything, and it still don't. I mean, I you know, every time that I have a litter, I can either learn something or be reminded that, like, it, you know, it's like, and I don't have the best mothers in the world. You know, they're just they've been bred for years now for performance, not for to be good mamas, and they just, you know, I mean, some of them are great ladies, fantastic. Some of them are terrible, you know, and you have to be prepared and know what to look for when the troubles are coming, you know, and you know, I've saved tons of them that, you know, would have been gone, you know, just by doing, you know, a few little things that are easy. So, you know, like I said, I'm more than glad to help anybody that needs it, you know, but you got to be willing to take the chance at you know, when you look at a pup that's feels cool, you know, in your hand there, it's going to die. So you may as well just get, you know, try to do these things. And it, you know, I've saved a bunch of them. So yeah, I'd be glad to help anybody that needs it.
Sure. Absolutely. Yep. Well, folks, I think we're going to wrap this one up this week. A great episode here with Randy Smith, the chief potentate here of the Lone Pine Kennels. And if you haven't heard of Lone Pine Trim Walkers, man, you have led a sheltered life. But Randy certainly has had tremendous success in the walker breed. And we thank him very much for the opportunity to be on the Gone to the Dogs podcast today. I do want to thank my friends out at W Hunting Supply for their continued support of this podcast. And as I mentioned, my buddy Big Mark Zepp with Zepp Predator Calls. You can get him at markzepp.com. You won't deal with a finer guy. Randy, we're going to wrap this thing up, and what are we going to do today? We're going to just wait for dark 30? We're going to run some beagles?
We got a little bit of rain last night, so we could maybe go see if we can't run a rabbit somewhere.
Bounce a rabbit, yeah.
Check on
good.
Them boys in there working on a house right now.
That's right. Randy's got some renovation projects going on around, and Troy's very much involved with that, and some of the other employees here with Armstrong Pest Control. Good guys, you know. And I think John Wick, we recently did an episode. He talked about being known by the company we keep. And, you know, everybody that I've met here in this organization are quality individuals. And so we're just doubly blessed to be at Lone Pine Kennels with this episode. And if you're wondering where I am, most of the time you'll find me in the woods or somewhere around the dog, because a long time ago, my mama said it best, I've gone to the dogs.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
How many discounts does USAA auto insurance offer? Too many to say here. Multi-vehicle discount, safe driver discount, new vehicle discount, storage discount, legacy.
How many discounts will you stack up? Tap the banner or visit usaa.com/autodiscounts. Restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th. U.S. only. See store online for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.